Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Must Be the Place, the Building Science Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. Each episode is a deep conversation with a carefully chosen peer about not just houses, but place. Yeah, of course we talk about houses and retrofits, but we also want to change the industry for the better, forever. Energy poverty, community engagement, industry disruption, societal responsibility, and climate change. It's all here and so much more. We're back with This Must Be the Place, your building science podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. I met my guest today on a CBC segment we were both on, which is not a bad way to make a connection. And we'll talk about that a little bit in our conversation. Kendall Ansell, sometimes referred to as the fairy designed mother, also gender smashing business owner, joins me today. She's the owner of Bell Construction and Kendall Ansell Interiors, located in Vancouver, BC. Welcome to the podcast, Kendall. So nice to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I see that there's a statement that my producer, Tanya, has put in front of me. It says, you believe that happiness starts at home. Where does that come from?
I think that just comes from being in the interior design field and working on homes for so many years and really seeing people, who would purchase a new home and really want to make it theirs. And then once we complete a transformation or do a design or whatever scope of work we're doing in the home, really seeing that person's personality and kid enjoying their new bedrooms and just really coming to life and feeling comfortable in their space. I really think that spaces reflect who we are. And I do really believe that if you can create a really amazing space for yourself that you feel comfortable in, then you can find true joy and happiness in your home.
And you've come from some true love and joy and happiness from your dad, right? You started out working with your dad in construction.
Is that right? I did. Yeah. So my brother and I, we were picked up from school and we were driven to the job site that he was working on. And we were the, I don't like to say the word cheap anymore, but we're the inexpensive labor that would help tidy up things at the end of the day and, be on the receiving end of cutting pieces of crown molding or baseboards or measuring or, any kind of odd job on the site. I would say we were, that was normal for us. We didn't really know the kids played after school. Yeah.
I think my dad was a mechanic and for several years he owned his own shop. And so, riding the hoist was a normal part of a weekend because that's when dad was working.
And I always, now I laugh at my dad because he, when he's driving, he's concentrating on driving now. But when we were kids, he would be on the phone, turning down the radio, eating a hamburger, signing a change order. Like, he'd be doing it all. And it looked like...
And also swatting at you guys in the back?
Totally. Well, because I'd be turning up the radio to hear the coolest song or something that, I wanted to. Yeah, yelling at us to be quiet. But, he was... there was a lot going on. And as kids, I didn't know any different. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. So when did you decide to start your own company?
Yeah, I think I always knew that I would own something solely on my own or start my own business with someone because I was seeing that he was available and he was my dad being available and flexible after school or for, hockey events that my brother was in. And I really enjoyed the freedom that I was seeing there. So I knew that was always probably my path. It came a little sooner than I expected. I was working, selling lighting and plumbing, and I really enjoyed my job. I was project managing and and things like that. And some circumstances in the workplace kind of led me to register a business and decide to start doing little AutoCAD projects on the side for people. And then that blossomed into a full-fledged design business that I had to jump in with both feet and not kind of a little bit here and a little bit there. I had to transition pretty quickly because it was becoming quite successful. So, yeah.
And that is that Bell Construction?
Yeah. So that's the design business. The design business is turning on to about 14 years. And Bell Construction really came from many years of doing the interior design service and wanting to immerse myself more in the building side of things. I was dropping off my design package, and then I kind of wanted to know what happened. I wanted to understand why the freestanding tub had to have an elevated platform underneath it, or I wanted to see the project from start to finish and all the details in between. So I decided that I wanted to jump into the contracting part of it. I think we're coming up to 4 years ago. And the women in trades angle only came from wanting to work with great people and thinking that, you know, there was an abundance of women in trades, when in fact, once I started, there was not.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really interesting, because in the design work that I've done, and consulting work that I've done, I basically hand it off to somebody else, and I've tried to work with some contractors and builders and renovators who can see the vision or they understand the basis for what I do in terms of net zero and deep energy retrofits and all those things. And I really wanted to do the start to finish design build stuff, but I just couldn't manage everything and be a single mom to two kids at the same time. So, you know,
yeah,
you can only stretch so far.
Yeah. And I definitely learned that with the interior design, being an entrepreneur, you're always alone. So, you know, now we were at 10 years for the interior design business, I was really sick of being alone. And I always had amazing staff around me. I hired great people. So I always had great people around me, but in the end, I was the ultimate decision maker. So when the idea of Bell came around and I really wanted to immerse myself more in construction, I actually brought on a business partner because I was tired of making all the decisions alone. It's a lot. And I knew that in order to get into this, I knew that great customer service was the heart of the construction kind of key to success. So I knew that I really needed to get great people that great staff that were surrounding me, and I needed more of them. So now I have all the staff on the design side. Now I'm going to bring on all the staff on the construction side, and it was too much for me. So I think though, going through the 10 years of being ignorant and thinking I can do everything myself, it was a good lesson. I feel like I went into Bell with all the hard lessons out.
Well, that's like
an intrigue thing.
That's a great way to go into a new business. I think we're both on the same page in terms of inclusivity. It's one of the biggest challenges we've got. So tell me about what you're doing in the field and how you're working with inclusivity and bringing what I hope everybody can see and hear the giant air quotes that I put around this non-traditional workforce.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I guess the origin story is probably where to begin on this. I actually had no idea that there were so few women in trades, which was probably me not doing my research before I started in. And I just wanted to work with great people. And what they noticed is if there was a female on site, we had more harmony on the job sites when I went into other people's job sites. So we come out the gates guns blazing. We're going to find primarily female team. In fact, I think I said multiple times exclusively female teams. And we were met with the reality that, all you know, a lot of these amazing women in trades were buried within very large companies. They were very comfortable. They'd been there for many years. They weren't coming out of that. There were some independent trades that, you know, painters, electricians, plumbers that were around. They were very sparse, few and far between. We came to the realization that there's now a huge problem. I think maybe if I had done more research up front, I would have seen the gap more clearly. But it really almost was like a learning opportunity to realize that there was such a big gap. So for us, we made it our mission to try to change the dialogue, what people were seeing. And that was the only thing I knew to blaze through on. So when the plumber comes to your home to do a repair, that your head doesn't think the male plumber is coming to my home to do a repair.
Right.
So that's what we refocused our mission on, is changing your expectation of what's going to happen when you hire a trade.
Right.
And that our early projects were so amazing to see, you know, little boys that live in the home. My staff were tearing down a wall. They bought the saws all out. And they can't believe it's females doing this work. And so some of those really early wins were kind of driving us forward, that this was the right thing to do. And we knew that now we were going to just try to make small change instead of coming in, you know, with the full fire.
Right. But we have to hit it from both those sides, because there can be women in the trades, but if they're not getting hired, or if they're getting buried in the, you know, in organizations that are larger and actually have a diversity inclusivity policy, you know, the challenge in our industry is we have so many tiny micro businesses that there's no way you can manage the expectations of a diversity policy within, you know, a one or two person contracting business.
Yes, for sure.
To have women in both positions. So we're hiring you. We're women. We're hiring you, and you're women, and we want to hire you. It's all good, right?
Yeah.
That's how we actually see change.
Yeah, for sure. I work on all kinds of areas of my business, and one thing that I find really interesting is the Google search terms have changed a bit. So you are seeing people search for female contractor or female plumber, and you're seeing those words. So I'm noticing that change, I would say, in the last few years. Yeah, that's something really cool. And locally here in Vancouver, I'm noticing the posting are changing for female or male carpenter. You're seeing those words head through the posting. Because when I first started, I had an Indeed post that was taken down like at least 10 times because I had the word female in the post. Which led me, I have an exemption with the Human Rights Tribunal for posting with that word female. That led me to that. But now I believe, and I don't quote me on this, that it indeed has changed so that we can include some gender words in their postings because people are doing it. And I'm noticing. So
interesting.
Yeah, those are some kind of interesting things that I think have really made a shift. Since we've started, so it only in 4 years, and I because we, you and I both know how slow this has been, those are huge strides, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about how we met, because that's a nice tie-in, right?
Yeah.
So we were approached separately by CBC, The Current, to talk about it's called a provocative podcast episode, where two fairly popular podcasters were kind of slamming women in the trades, and they wanted, and so the current wanted to hear from women who were in the trades or in the industry. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we met.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I, being located in Vancouver, the air times were different on that segment. Well, I was up, I don't remember, some godly time, like 5 a.m. to do that.
Yeah, and, sorry about that. And
I remember, like, it was dark in the kitchen, like, okay, let's do this. But as people listened throughout the country, I kept getting text messages from, you know, people I know in Ontario, and then all, and I know in Quebec City or Vegas. Mm-hmm. And it had it, that episode had a huge reach. I just don't know. I think because it was on at prime time when probably people were commuting, but we had calls to the office as well from other contractors asking how they can make change in their businesses. And we've been hired by quite a few people who heard the episode as well. So
That was great.
Yeah, it was really great. Considering it, we were brought together for an unfortunate circumstance. I think that the segment spread a really good message across the country.
Yeah, yeah. I got lots of really positive feedback from it as well, and had several people, you know, mention, hey, I heard this, or I didn't know you were doing this work, or how do I get in touch with Bell Construction as well, which was
super cool. Good.
Yeah. So after the episode, you and I had a phone call just to sort of debrief, because it was like, well, I don't know who this person is. And we did this amazing little bit of
radio
work together.
Radio together.
And so you were talking about franchising.
Yeah.
And is that something that's moving forward?
Yeah, we've had an interesting, since that time, it's been interesting. We definitely are still actively looking for franchisees, but we had, you know, end of COVID supply chain project. We ended up kind of in the fray a bit. I would say just now we're getting our head above water again. Also from an influx of work, which was amazing for us. But it's spreading the message across to as many people as we can and starting to make the micro change. I think having franchisees across the country for Bell is just another way for change to happen in a different way.
Yeah, so that I'd like to talk a little bit about that, you know, as much as you want to put forward about that business model, because this segment or the theme that we're talking about in this part of this season is disruption and change and innovation and who's doing it. And here you are. So
yeah.
Can you whatever you want to
get. I like the word disruptor. That's great. Mm. I can go with it, disruptor. I think it's so for me, it's just everyday life. This is the inclusivity and working with a diverse group of people. That's just to me, and being in Vancouver, that's just normal to me. Mm-hmm. My friend group is diverse. My life is diverse. And it's really just about, you know, hiring people that you know, like, and trust and are comfortable working with, and creating a work environment that allows for people to feel safe and included in and enjoy making changes to people's homes. It's to me, it just seems so simple. And with Bell, I mean, like I said, I came in with all the tools ready to make this company successful. We know that, you know, we need good marketing, and we know that we need to spread the word of inclusion, and all these ingredients that just seem so normal to me, I would like to give to others to spread across. And I think
without having to reinvent the wheel, because that's, I mean, like, really, that's where I think where a huge number of folks in the industry tend to fall down, because they may be really, really fantastic at what they do, but they may not have business management skills. They may not, you know, now everybody's run off their feet. Who needs to do marketing? You can't even keep up with the work that's coming in the door. But how do you expand and create something that's a sustainable system for yourself and for the rest of your team? That's a big, a big piece.
Yeah.
So I really, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that and helping you promote it, because I think it's just a fantastic, fantastic.
It's something, and I think it's just it was like, okay, my business partner and I sat down. I was like, how do we do this? How do we make more change? I mean, I can change my little neighborhood and my little area here, but without other people and other, I call them Avengers across the country, we can't, or, even just locally, we can make so much more change in numbers. So that's kind of where the franchising angle came from. We always, as soon as we came up with the business idea, kind of what we were going to do with our inclusion, we knew we would franchise. It was just a given. It was like, this is the way forward. And it's been something that I did, unfortunately, my head back into. It's been an interesting little bit, but I'm looking forward to working more on it, basically.
Yeah. Great. Right on. Well, we'll stay in touch, and maybe we'll have another episode with, we can actually walk through the whole franchisee process and everything when you get it further along the way. Yeah, I know that. Well, COVID has just like smashed everything to pieces in terms of continuity and then supply chain issues. And how do you do something where we can't finish a job because we have no pieces?
Yeah,
like the technical
problem. Because infection, you can't. You're just we as every business owner does. We were stuck in the fray that. With that, we're getting there. I'm noticing supply chain is changing and getting a bit better, and it's the new reality.
I have a question about your customer base. Are you seeing more women homeowners, or is the ratio of women homeowners to couples? And I guess when it's in couples, I'm actually or men.
The answer would surprise you. It's a common question that I get asked, because with the business model, it's going to be mainly females or this that, and it's not. It's families, it's single people, it's people from all communities. We're maybe that comfortable contract when someone's not sure, or it's their first time renovating or something like that. I would say that that's mainly our target. And that was surprising when we launched. We expected a certain type of demographic to find us and work with us, but it didn't end up that way. It just ended up with people who wanted kind of that more trusting touch. And I do think that when it's your first time renovating and you're very nervous and you watch so much HGTV that you think that you're going to be ripped off. That's not what ended up happening. I find I'm typically, if it's a husband and wife scenario, I would be interviewed by the wife, and then the husband maybe is less involved in what's going to happen, but wants to know that everything is smooth. Mm-hmm. A lot of single people. Yeah, all different walks of life, all different colors of the rainbow. So it's just, cool. It was surprising.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you think it would skew to one demographic for sure, because you're serving that demographic up to people. But I do know that there's a lot of, like, the time that I've been, all the time that I've been involved as a consultant or a contractor, that there's a visible loosening of people's shoulders when I walk in the room, because they don't maybe see me as threatening or as just a different mindset, I guess. I don't want to piss anybody off, but there are stereotypes out there, and all the HGTV horror shows. All that renovation porn really doesn't help the industry at all, but it makes for great TV. And what do people typically see? They typically see male contractors on those shows. And what I've seen, because I don't watch a lot of TV, is that often when there's a woman contractor in there, she's like the heroine. She's amazing. And people are like, you're astounding and wonderful and amazing. And that show is great because it has this oddity there of this woman contractor. Oh. And then you go back to the next episodes and it's all, you know, guys who are, you know, not doing good jobs and all this stuff. I think that's really unfair to everybody.
Yeah, no, for sure. And when you were saying choosing your words wisely, I choose my words wisely on this topic as well. I think that it, again, you're selling a TV show and you have to have a level of normalcy and drama at the same time. I would like to see that shift and to have kind of a different dialogue depicted, but I also understand money and.
I mean, the whole reality show version of things where you have the, you know, this, there's always got to be this disaster in waiting that may or may not turn out the way that, you know, it may actually not happen. It may happen. I thought that it can't just be a happy ending story. There has to be the, all of the contrast and, yeah, drama.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, it's the unfortunate part. I do ask people if they watch the shows when I talk to them about a project, because, you know, we want to know kind of what level of heightening they are for the for the worst case. And I noticed a few buzzwords that will be said, you know, like, do we have it money in the contingency for this? And, you know, like, there's things that they picked up from the shows and that they want to talk to you about, or rot or asbestos or, you know, things like that. And I'm happy that the shows are able to bring to light a few of the things that can happen. But, you know, ultimately, most projects don't go like that. And, you know, so most projects are smooth. I'd say the thing that is always a drama is timeline. Always a drama.
Always, because you can. Yeah, there's so many moving parts in that, the scheduling of
and
everybody and everything. Yeah,
everything, and COVID made that harder. We'll be walking up those stairs for a long time, because when that small electrical team one gets COVID, they're all out.
Yeah,
and that pushes your timeline. You don't have anyone else in the wings. You can't pass off the job. They had already started. You have a lot, some different factors now that are involved, for sure.
Yeah, I have some friends who started build. They signed on with for a new build. I think must be about 18 months ago, and they were supposed to be in the house. I'm going to say like at the 10-month point. And that was with a couple of, you know, shifts from the initial 6 months. And they finally got in within, like, I think, 16 months.
Since, oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Like, just like, and it was all delays because of COVID-induced, you know, whether there weren't people there or the supply chain pieces. So it's going to be for a while. But that's we all have to live with that piece, right?
Yeah, that seems like the new normal for us.
The new normal. Oh, great. Living with COVID is, I won't get into that rant because I am living with COVID. I had, I got it in February and I have long COVID now. So my health has been seriously impacted. So I have a lot to say about it, but it won't be on the podcast with you. I want to switch a little bit because we do a lot of training, and I just understand that you have just done a recent teaching job or position. So can you talk about that?
I did my first lecture at our local technical school. And I was really nervous to do this because it was in front of many male contractors. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure how it was going to go. The students were amazing. They were super receptive to everything I was talking about. I led with my design business, and then I kind of pivoted to just awareness of women in trades. And when you're hiring, you know, please keep these things in mind, and all of the advantages that having a diverse team can bring to those people. And then I had this really great comment, which I wanted to share on this, from a teaching aide that was in the room. He was very combative when I started talking about the women in trades angle, kind of, you know, sat up a little bit differently in his chair. And he mentioned, he asked me in front of the whole crowd if what happens when the 5-gallon bucket of paint shows up on site, who lifts it? And I had one of my employees in the auditorium there, and I thought she was going to jump down 20 levels of feet. She did not. But my response, which I think made his question stop, was that most of my employees could bench press him very easily. And that there is a thing called a dolly, which is typically helpful for said activity. But just very interesting, as the group of students was younger, how receptive they were and engaged they were on this topic versus kind of an older generation, which perhaps really still sees the construction world as only male. Mm-hmm. And it was a great reminder for me, because I think, like I said, I walk through life in my world, which is very diverse and equal in my household and wherever I go. And then you kind of get those moments and check a little bit of a check where you're right. Like, oh, this very much still exists. And we all know it does. Again, with COVID, the head goes in the sand and you're not seeing people. It was an interesting moment.
That's one of the things that, and I've talked a little bit about it in other podcasts and also in the introductory essay that I did for this piece or this segment, that we do a great disservice to men and women when we say, well, who picks up the 5-gallon can of paint? It's like, so does that mean that you can only, your experience is that you can only be a 6-foot-tall, strapping, able-bodied man to do that work? Like, you know, the 5-gallon can of paint, when I was out in the field, I was also hauling around a toddler and a 6-year-old and all my groceries in one trip from the car. So
100%.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, thanks, whatever. Gallon, you know, yeah. Paint, kid, for what?
Yeah.
But I think there's this really cool place where we can look at appropriate technology, whether it's a dolly or my thing that I really want to find somebody to interview about is exoskeletons, machines that are actually built so that you can support your upper body. So Hilti does one for above head work. So they're actually, there's a passive and an active one. So you could actually have hydraulics helping you to hold up pieces of drywall over your head, for example. And there's also chairless seats that basically strap onto your butt like a work belt, but they actually are attached to the backs of your legs. So instead of having knee pads, you actually have something that will help you to hold yourself in a squatting position.
Yeah.
And take the pain, the wear and tear out of your legs. And those kinds of things, like, if you're a guy in the trades, don't you actually want to be able to kneel down when you're 40?
Yeah.
Or lift your arms above your head. Like, come on. This is stuff that is damaging to everyone.
Yeah.
So let's find better ways.
Exactly. And there are so many better ways. And the strength comment is the most common comment. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's a lot, we did this little showroom renovation where it was like in front of a cooler store. And we did a freestanding tub. Again, they're acrylic. They're super easy to move. But when our team went to move it, a bunch of guys jumped in from the showroom at other points to help. So there's this whole, there's a chivalry part to it, which is, you know, also raising, I have a son, so we're raising a flight son to hold the door and to assist when someone looks like they potentially need help to assist. But then there's a whole other side of it that just like, well, you can't live that and well, you can't do that. So I think there is a bridge between there somewhere.
Yeah. And I've got my son is now going into construction. He's working with a renovator now. And I'm going to go back to the thing that you said about, you know, your customers, little boys, seeing women tearing down walls and stuff. Well, that was my son's first experience of renovation with me and my two women friends ripping out walls from their new house. And Jess was just like, you mean I get to smash things? And we're like, really fun. And so his concept of what women do in the world is much broader than for a whole bunch of other folks' kids, because that's, you know, just like you, he was coming with me to sites because that's what you do when you're a single parent. My daughter was out on the first time she was out on a construction site, she was 10 days old.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. Yeah.
But
it's just, it's just interesting to do speaking again and kind of start in that group again and to be reminded of why we're doing what we do, right?
Yeah. So are you going to do more teaching?
Hope so. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It makes me very nervous, which is exciting. So it's nice to get nervous and excited again, for sure. So we'll see.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. And was that with BCIT?
Yeah, that's with BCIT. Mm-hmm. With School of Construction. So that was lovely. Right on.
Yeah, because they have they've got a really good center of excellence there for high performance housing and stuff. So that's great. They teach. I think they run the passive house program there.
Yes, sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And we have a few students from the Women in Trades program on our team as well.
Great.
Yeah. And really, I can't say enough good about that program and what the women are learning. It's Intro to Trades, I believe, here.
Okay.
And they're kind of doing a bit of everything. So a little bit of welding, a little bit of pipe fitting,
find out what they
electrical.
Right. To find out the things that they're interested in. So there is there's a program out here in Nova Scotia. My COVID brain is just like, I've worked with them for, you know, a few years now. I can't remember.
That's okay. That happens to me, unfortunately, too much as well. But and I might even be saying, I believe it's Intro to Trade, but, and then we have quite a few grants and incentives for women who want to go to that schooling as well. And the government has some programs where they'll pay for your tools and your PPE and all those things. So there's a lot of cool incentives for women getting into the trades or wanting to.
And those are provincial, the ones you're talking about?
I believe this one is provincial, but I also believe that every province has different opportunities.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So people could look for those. And speaking of PPE, do you know Helga Ware?
I don't. Need to intro me.
I need to intro you because Jody Huttner is she's working. This is her big. This is her area, and she's also a guest in this segment on talking about issues around PPE and gendered language on top of gendered issues. So I will connect you. She is also in Vancouver. There's a lot of good things happening there. All the cool people come from Vancouver.
All the cool people.
I was born there too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I'm sure there's other cool people across the planet, but we stand out over here.
We stand out. Yeah. So what would be your advice to women who are wanting to get into the construction trades now?
Advice. I think that I would do your research for ones available locally for you, because I think you'll be very surprised to see the grant and opportunities that are available in your province or territory. And there is a lot of opportunity for jobs for women in trade. It pays better than a restaurant position. Mm-hmm. Entry wage is much better. And look for a company that allows flexibility for your job, because a lot of people are in our area are talking about inclusivity and, you know, making a great culture and work environment for people. So really, once you decide kind of which trade you're looking to do, obviously by doing an intro class or speaking to your local technical school, then go out and really research the companies you want to work for and make sure it's the right fit for you, because there's nothing worse than signing on with a company and having harassment, as we've discussed on our CBC segment, or any sort of hazing or anything like that. That really is what is turning women away from trade.
Yeah. There's an attrition rate that's pretty significant. I mean, they're saying that, that there is women are dumping out of trades between, 2 and 5 years after getting their apprenticeship finished, or they're just, it's not an apprenticed trade, that it's, and it's because of inflexibility around childcare, and also the harassment. Like when you have to, work and eat and breathe with folks on a construction site and they're awful to you.
Yeah.
That's a no-go. I mean, I've been in an abusive relationship or two, and I dumped out of them because nobody needs to live with that kind of crappy normal.
Correct. And you need to love, we all need to, mental health is talked about all the time now. You need to work in an environment you love, you need to work with people that you at least like. And, there's so much joy that can be found with doing this work, and there's so many great companies around, and it just takes a minute to find them. And I think once you have that rewarding job that allows flexibility, that allows a school pickup, that allows a school draft, that maybe we have employees that only work a few days a week and they spend the rest of the week with their kids. And, I think if employers aren't jumping on this kind of flexible work or flexible lifestyle, they're really missing the mark in 2022. Mm-hmm. I think we're beyond this, 9 to 5 in this industry. And if you want to, also for the employer, if you want to obtain great people, you need to be able to accommodate their lifestyles correctly.
Right. Great. And also as the employer, it allows you to accommodate your lifestyle as well. I mean, I know for me, that was for you, the flexibility of being my own boss and being able to bring my kids because, must needs. I don't have daycare for them today. That was hugely beneficial to me in being able to actually get to this place in my life. So. Now that I don't have kids that need me so much, it's kind of refreshing to have a little bit of flexibility in my day.
for sure. And just be able to live. And again, you're not coming home angry or upset and breathing stress. So yeah, I think, again, in 2022, I think if companies are not on the bandwagon yet, probably not one you want to look at working for, in my opinion.
No, I would agree. I mean, I think there's a lot of folks out there, especially younger folks, who are really moving into a place of I'm not super interested in working for, you know, two jobs that pay crappy wage just to be able to live in a two-bedroom apartment with a roommate.
Totally.
Different. We need to find better balances. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that idea. So I have two questions I usually ask at the end of the each episode that have to do with energy efficiency and building science. And
okay. I'll
shift them up a little bit because I know that that is not your forte, but you're still in the industry. So here we go. What's your all-time favorite nerdy, delightful thing about construction and design?
I always say I am such an electrical lighting nerd. I could talk about light. I love light so much. I have no idea what apparently my dad said I was obsessed with Christmas lights, like to a point where I was like recircuiting things as a kid. But I would say my obsession is electrical and lighting. And I think if you're not concentrating on lighting in a design, then the rest of the design won't really work. So, you know, lighting is so important, and that's why I nerd out. Like I get in front of a client that wants to talk about pot light placement and the science of how light hits things. Like my team says, I get this like funny face, like, it's time to shine. So I go with a nerd for lighting. Yeah. Yeah. That's my bite.
God.
There you go.
That's a good one. Okay. So. What building or construction BS or myth or stereotype drives you crazy?
I think we touched on it. I think it's going to be that the disaster is coming in the middle of a project, which, like I said, never the case. And if it is, so one in a million. I've seen way too many homes, worked on way too many projects, that we usually know what's going to happen. And if there is any sort of disaster, it's usually a flood of some type or a water damage. But that just drives me nuts because we were heading in, like, it's like an expectation that's set before you even walk in the door.
Yeah. 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 And people love to people love to share their war stories.
Yeah.
Too. So
they're really going to tell you what's going to happen badly before they're going to tell you what's going to happen well. So.
Yeah, I think it's an awful lot like when you know, I remember this when I was pregnant, I'd have all these older women going, oh, you're in for it. And here's this. And you'd be like, I'm right in the midst of like building this other creature inside me. I don't want to hear desperate stories of pain and anguish and awfulness. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no, for sure. Everybody can tell you doom and gloom, but. That's not reality.
Cool. Well, I think that what we will do on this in the show notes is we'll make some links to Bell Construction and Kendall Enfield Interiors, but also see if you can send me any of the information that you've got on BC grant programs, CIT grants for women at women in the trades. I'll do a little bit of background work, and I will see what else is available across the country, and then folks can have at least a starting place for some resources.
Yeah, that's great. I'd love that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So thanks so much for your time today, Kendall. We really appreciate it. And that's our episode for today. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in. This episode was produced by Blue House Energy, Podcast Atlantic, and Tanya Media. Subscribe and don't miss an episode. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time.